Subscribe to the Good Show podcast with your favorite podcatcher. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. This is Good Show with Ennis Bunkus.
This one's good!
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Happy Wednesday. It's Good Show. Sportsnet 590 The Fan. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus. It's good to be the center of the sporting world once again for just a brief period of time. It's Kawhi Day. Happy Kawhi Day to you.
Here's the thing. We're always the center of Vancouver's sporting world.
That's true.
And so there's always the glow from Vancouver. That's why they turn the lights on.
Yeah, you're right.
Yeah. Don't ever forget that.
Yeah, we should actually pull some clips from Vancouver Sports Radio. Sportsnet 650 this morning. See their hot Leaf takes. We'll have lots of Leaf talk coming up in the Leaf Hour.
I could predict every single one of them. Leafs Hour. Leafs Hour is where we'll do the fun Leafs recap stuff. Because last night was all right. That was a great hockey game.
Oh, it was an awesome hockey game.
But it was late. Not 7 o'clock next time. Yeah. Back to 7, I'd say.
It's all fun and games.
We tried it out, and we're good with 7.
Yeah. Hey, listen, we can joke around about, you get to play at your normal time, and ha, 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 ha. You know what? On second thought, nah, we don't like that. And guess what? Yeah. What we want goes.
Yeah.
So.
True story.
So, Canucks fans, we're gonna do that at 4 o'clock Pacific time next time. Yeah. Okay? Next year?
We're gonna do the Leafs Hour at 10 o'clock real time, Eastern Standard Time, the accepted time.
Yeah, that's true.
So it's Kawhi Day, man.
It's
Kawhi Day.
ESPN's in town. They got the game tonight. We're gonna talk to Richard Jefferson, who's part of the call. It really does.
Oh, dude, we got a sick show today.
Oh yeah, we got Chris Haynes.
Haynes, Mr. Kawhi Camp.
Mm-hmm.
Got Richard Jefferson, who I'm fascinated to talk to because, man, he was on one of these championship teams where it felt like the sporting world had finally kissed Cleveland.
Yep.
And it no longer resonates. And culture matters, and the way LeBron built his team versus the way Masai built his team are very different. But it is a good reminder of how fleeting these things can be and how quickly things can turn around and change and what lasts and what doesn't. And so that's kind of where I wanted to start with you today. Is that everyone's going to be doing a look back today.
Mm-hmm.
Everyone is going to do the Kawhi Leonard, what did he mean to the city? Did he ever want to stay? Remember the shot in game 4? Remember the shot in game 7? Remember saying, F it, let's get 2 against the Bucks? Mm-hmm.
Do you remember
the Warriors third quarter?
Do you remember that apparently he was given the option of not even playing game 4 against the Bucks after playing 50 minutes and double overtime and hobbling off the court?
Siakam missing that free throw.
And then the rest of the team actually playing behind him.
Kawhi in goggles, Kawhi spraying the champagne, Kawhi and Kyle Lowry sitting down on the chair, pushing the MVP trophy back and forth.
Yeah.
Kyle getting a C, the Larry O'Brien. What a do, baby. The parade. Marcus Saul crushing every bottle on the bus.
Uh-huh.
Sitting next to the prime minister telling Fred VanVleet, I'm drunk. Ha, ha, ha. Closing speech. New Balance stupidly releasing that thing about how they have a big announcement at the parade and then it ended up being a colorway.
Yeah.
The flight back to Toronto, leaving the MLSC jet.
Yeah.
Kawhi coming back. Is that him? Is that not him?
News
tracking
helicopters.
Him to Yorkville. Kawhi watch. Jalen Rose tweeting that Kawhi, he was here and it was done. He was going to stay. And it was a matter of not just whether or not he was staying, but a matter of what the term was. Mm-hmm. That this was not just going to be a one-year banger. The Friday night news dump, 2 a.m., stab in the heart. That was signing in L.A., coinciding with Paul George going. And then it really, to me, it felt like a blur because I think a lot of people shut themselves off to thinking about it for a little while. Every once in a while, you would have to acknowledge that he was a Clipper and that you thought maybe they were the favorites and that the NBA had all these duos. But that largely the Raptors were in this, what was going to be a transition year. And then the Raptors come out of the gate and they're red hot. And Siakam looks incredible. And it looks like he's, you know, taking on the mantle of a franchise player, a franchise star. Kyle Lowry is playing as well as he's ever played. Marc Gasol is looking great despite playing basketball the entire summer. They've signed a bunch of pieces around the periphery that start working with them. And everyone's kind of excited. And it's a little bit out of sight, out of mind. And then they go to L.A. and it feels a little underwhelming because they're on a back-to-back. They have this emotional peak against the Lakers where they win this game against Braun and Davis. And it's an undermanned squad scrapping it out. But ultimately, they do a good job against Kawhi Leonard. And it's just, it's at night. It doesn't, it's not there. Tonight is the night. Tonight is the closure. And what I want to start with in terms of a conversation topic is this. What is the lasting impact for you of Kawhi Leonard? What are you going to think is the greatest resonance of his title run here in Toronto?
Well, it's twofold, but it's all-encompassing when it comes to this franchise. It put this franchise on a different level, right?
Yep.
Because they were a successful franchise, and it was so easy, I mean, having lived through it, to look at that time period and getting waxed by LeBron every time they faced him in the playoffs as it being embarrassing and like, oh, man, what a horrible time to live through all those playoff disappointments. They should have been one of the envies of many teams around the NBA, but they weren't. And they were viewed, you know, kind of rightly as a bit of a laughingstock still. They weren't the Purple Dinosaur franchise. They were a little bit above that, but they weren't in the elite.
And now, to be fair, Toronto did that to themselves a little bit by talking themselves up, being angry that there wasn't more respect year over year over year, only to get LeBron called this to his city, Toronto.
So
LeBronto.
Okay, even if this team doesn't have realistic title aspirations, which we're, the jury's still out on. Mm-hmm. This franchise, viewed at large, is on a different place. And it's a place that can, I mean, you can't say attract the biggest names in the sport because that was a trade, but they can exist with those players and elevate their prestige throughout the league. And we can have an identity because I know so much of it was Kawhi is the silent assassin. He's the guy that just quietly goes about his business and works hard, and you don't hear from him afterwards. That was this team's identity before that. He amplified it, and now it's the whole organization.
Here's the thing. I think you're right, but I'm not sure how long that lasts.
Which part of it? The prestige thing?
The prestige is one thing because you forever carry the patch on the back of your uniform.
Yeah.
Everyone will always have to acknowledge that you have an NBA championship, that you have a ring. But do we look at, again, I know they're run differently, but this is what I'm saying, that, and I know all things are temporary, so we don't have to get into that discussion. But ultimately, I'm not sure how long these things last because, again, we saw it in Cleveland. Cleveland had a homegrown star, granted. It was a special thing. But how is that any different from Toronto? Cleveland ultimately turned very, very quickly into the most irrelevant market in the NBA.
Right.
Well, or at least one of them.
Well, the Cleveland is also a different city than Toronto.
I know it's a different city, but and so is San Antonio, right, who's had this incredible run.
Yeah.
I'm just saying that San Antonio was built differently. Mm-hmm. They have a culture. They are prestigious. Mm-hmm. Of course they are. They've had all this winning, right? Mm-hmm. How could they not be? And now all of a sudden, oh, San Antonio doesn't feel so special anymore. And again, I know this is part of being pro sports. I just think that it's also something that's important to recognize if you're the Toronto Raptors and we're looking at windows, right?
Yeah.
Windows of opportunity. When we're looking forward to say the Raptors have a shot at Giannis Antetokounmpo, mm-hmm. I think that, yes, that's right now in the glow of a championship with a team that supported Kawhi Leonard and was a great surrounding cast with an executive in Masai Ujiri while the city is in a firestorm of look how great Toronto is. How can you believe how overlooked this place has been for so long? I just don't know what the – I don't think there's a permanence to it, and I think that sometimes we act like there is.
Well, it obviously comes down to the players, right? Ultimately, hey, the Lakers were a bit of a joke too.
The
right?
players, when, the front office.
When Smush Parker was running, you know, Robin to Kobe's Batman, that was a bit of a joke franchise too, right? And before they landed Anthony Davis, same thing, despite the fact that they had –
in the wilderness.
Right?
But they were always – the thing is, though, is that they were always a glamour franchise.
Yes, and the Raptors will never be that in the NBA
but that's,
because they don't have the long history. But what we can do now is we have a place that it's been before, right?
Yes.
Like, but if you know, they went through another cycle without winning this championship, it'd be like, well, it's just never going to happen. This is just this franchise, this outpost, and we can enjoy our basketball that we have to ourselves. But continental relevancy will just never exist here. We know it's possible. That's the difference.
Well, I also think that it was impossible to ignore. And that for a city that, as much as we probably overvalue the importance of being seen in the United States, mm-hmm. I think there was import in showing the world what it looked like in Toronto, what it looks like if you win in Toronto, what it means to be the face of a country versus the face of a city, how it does just have a difference to it. And that showcase, I think, will, again, last for a while. I think that has become important, that Toronto has elevated itself clearly, and not that it shouldn't have always been this way, but clearly above the Clevelands, clearly above the Minnesotas, right? Yeah. Those places that have long existed as, well, you're kind of all the same type of franchise. No, it's just not that way anymore. It's Toronto. It's not a glamour franchise.
No.
And it never will be.
No.
And I've said this before, that the best way for them to approach their team building is always through internal growth and development and trades and accumulating assets, rather than trying to become the Knicks where you're acquiring players.
It's never happened. Until you do that once. Yeah.
Right. It's just not who you are as a franchise. And trying to convince yourself that you are the Lakers or even that you are the Celtics is, I think, fool's gold. I think there's a few things here when I look at resonance or what lasts from the Raptors. One is the fan base and basketball in this country, which are separate from the organization. And I think that is going to be the biggest one, the longest lasting impact that could actually end up shaping the franchise differently down the line.
So you're talking about grassroots.
It's hard for me to believe that this hasn't changed basketball in this country forever in a really, really significant way.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, there's kids who grow up now thinking playing for the local franchise is the dream.
And people that are closer to it disagree with me. Grange has disagreed with me. Donovan's disagreed with me. But I will always wonder if Canada Basketball forks over the cash to have the last chance tournament in British Columbia if the Raptors don't win.
Yeah.
If they don't feel as though there's some impact of the Raptors run and wanting to capitalize on basketball and understanding that you not only have the base and you not only have the players that you want to capitalize on and you want to build this culture and it starts with being here, make it easy, but also that there is momentum from the Raptors run and from interest in basketball in this country that has amplified the desire for people to see their players play for the national program.
Well, that's interesting that you bring up money too, because I've written down here corporate, like the New Balance brand here, yeah. Right? Like what has, and I'd love to talk to somebody from New Balance as to the actual financial impact of Kawhi Leonard here. I mean, that's a big part of it too, because so much of it.
Didn't we know that though?
What? That
you can make money off of the Raptors?
I would like to think so.
I don't think that was a big state secret.
And you can still make money off LeBron James in Cleveland, of course. But I'm sure, maybe, you know what? I'm not sure because I don't know corporate culture. But I would hazard to guess that there would be big United States corporations who would be worried about not tarnishing their brand, but not getting the best bang for their buck if their number one spokesperson is north of the border.
To be fair, it was a, I don't want to say off-brand shoe, but a below prestige brand shoe.
Which has turned, like, their investment in Kawhi Leonard has been one of the smartest corporate strategies.
Well, we'll see. It's given them visibility in this country, absolutely. But do you think more people bought New Balance shoes or bought the Fun Guy shirt?
I don't know. I would assume both.
I don't know. I don't feel as though New Balance is all of a sudden extremely popular outside of their runners, that all of a sudden they've broke into the basketball shoe.
But I would say, but before Kawhi Leonard, you would say New Balance. Oh, yeah, it's like, well, it's
back to that
45-year-old dads. It's running shoes. No, for me, number one, it's Kawhi Leonard. You say New Balance now to any person
in Toronto.
You don't think that you go south of the border and you
so
say New
Balance?
So that's
your lasting impact, though? You think that a brand buying into a champion?
No,
I'm confused.
I didn't say that was my lasting impact. I said that's part of it. Yeah. When you're talking about money getting funneled into Canada basketball, it's also, there's money to be made in basketball in this country.
Right, but I also think that that New Balance thing doesn't happen the same way without the Raptors winning a championship.
For sure.
It was a fortuitous gamble. Mm-hmm. They made this, they offered him more money. It was the right time in the market. There's a couple of other shoe companies that have come forward and tried to challenge Nike and Adidas by adding to their arsenal. Puma mm-hmm. comes to mind as well. Mm-hmm. They've added a whole bunch of different players and they've given them stuff. And Danny Green, in fact, probably to a lesser extent, but wearing the championship Pumas in the NBA championship games. I don't look at that and say, wow, this is going to change how businesses perceive the Raptors or different runs. I think people want to glom on to stars. They want to glom on to the potential of, yes, having added visibility to your product, which they did accurately. They did in a really, really smart way, New Balance did. So basketball in the country is always going to be one. I do believe more kids are going to play. It's going to be a sport of import in the city, in the country. It's going to be viewed differently. I feel as though it already has shifted in terms of the tug and pull between hockey fans and basketball fans. It doesn't feel like it used to. And I only can tell from my own experience or my friends' experiences or the ones that I see online, but it genuinely does not feel as though there is the same level of animosity towards basketball by hockey first fans in this country as there used to be. That basketball was sold to people. Everyone got to see how great the game was. Everyone likes to jump on the bandwagon of a champion. And it was impossible not to follow these Raptors. And also, they were kind of the perfect team to bring hockey fans over because they're not overly flashy. They were a quiet team. They were a blue-collar team. They work really hard, and they were better than the sum of their parts in some ways. They played as a team. They played defense, all that different stuff. They did Canada very, very proud. They represented a lot of what I think Canadians would like to see in a team on a national level with that type of visibility. So there's that. And we'll see what the impact is of that, you know, 20 years from now, when maybe there's more people in the national program, maybe the Raptors are more of a free agent destination because Canadians continue to populate the NBA and guys also want to play at home.
Yeah.
Who knows? Those things, that I think is going to be the greatest actual lasting resonance when it comes to far, far, far down the road. But the short term, I think it's with the players. Do you believe it's a coincidence that OG Anunoby and Pascal Siakam have come out of the gate this way? Terrence Davis' favorite player, by the way, was Kawhi Leonard. But do you not think those guys borrowed a lot from Kawhi and that a big reason, of course they're not as good if he's not here, but how much better those guys got from having Kawhi Leonard around? Going on a playoff run like that, Siakam obviously more so because he actually played in those games, but how those two guys were shaped by having a guy they could look to and say, why can't we be that? Why can't we model ourselves after that?
I don't think there's any question about that, and I think it'll be super interesting to see what happens in the postseason because this team has been through it. They've seen what it takes. They've seen a guy turn it on in the postseason as well. They've seen a guy be pretty good during the regular season, but explicitly say this is 82 practices. It's all about the postseason. I don't think there's any doubt that Pascal Siakam and OG Anunoby looked at the way Kawhi Leonard would pace himself, even within an individual 48-minute game, so that he was at his absolute best and most effective in crunch time in the fourth quarter. Yeah, you're right. I mean, that has a lasting impact. I mean, it's not great that the last four games of sample for Pascal Siakam. He has kind of gotten away from that earlier in the season. But yeah, man, who's not looking at what Kawhi Leonard did and trying to take as much from that as possible? We saw him having conversations with guys all season long last year and them trying to pick his brain. I think you're absolutely right.
There's likely a confirmation bias to it when we watch these games and we see some of the pieces. Like with Siakam, he knocks down an above-the-break three. Or shoots a long two. And we say, that's what Kawhi does. Mm-hmm. That's also what a lot of players do. That's a natural progression for a guy that couldn't shoot to try to add shooting to his game. But I would love to know privately how those guys changed their approach and what actually happened from knowing Kawhi. What actually did they observe that he did they wanted to apply to their own games and to their own lives? Mm-hmm.
And yeah, so much of it is unapplicable because there's only one Kawhi Leonard. Mm-hmm. And yeah, you're probably not going to be a deadly assassin and like hit a fadeaway high arcing shot to win a game 7 over a 7-footer. at the buzzer that hits four rims. But yeah, yeah, man, it's all good. It's going to be a great moment tonight at Scotiabank Arena. I can't wait for it.
How are you feeling going into it?
I feel good. I'm glad that they beat the Bulls. Like, that would have been a rough feeling. Like, your first four-game losing streak in years, and then you got Kawhi Leonard. And I know they're on a tough road trip where they're kind of salty after getting destroyed by the Milwaukee Bucks. And
they also just pumped the Pacers.
Yeah, they did. Yeah. Without Kawhi Leonard that night, too.
I meant more about your feelings about Kawhi Leonard. How do you think you're going to feel when... Because there's going to be emotion, and it's probably going to be very positive when they're running the video and you get to remember. But then there is also the, what could have... You want the party to keep lasting.
Yeah. To me, there's only one emotion that everyone's going to be feeling. It's gratitude and, like, emotion. Like, you're going to feel real choked up to see Kawhi before the game, and you hope that he gives some acknowledgement. He'll probably put his hand up, but we know there's not going to be a ton from him. But then
he's not going to start openly weeping.
Yeah, probably not.
Yeah, don't expect
would be
that.
My guess. Yeah. He's going to get the ring and he's going to say, yeah, thank you. But then at that point, I'm going to turn it to the place that I've been this entire season when they've not been playing Kawhi Leonard is like, I hope he loses every single game.
That's how I feel about it too.
And I honestly... I'd be cool with them booing him every time he touches the ball after the ceremony before the game.
I know we have to break, but I'm glad you brought that up because Donovan Bennett and I talked about this on Free Association yesterday afternoon, and he thinks it's illogical for people to boo Kawhi Leonard when he shoots or when he has the basketball in this game, and I don't think it is.
No.
And I don't think... To me, you can actually boo someone without having it be a hateful boo. Is that a bad take?
No. It's booing is a sports thing.
Yeah, I don't...
You're not booing Kawhi Leonard because he says he wants to go see his family more and hates the cold weather. You're booing him because he's a good player on the other team and you want him to lose.
It's also a bit of a sign of respect.
Yes.
You're the best player. We're booing you. The one that would ring hollow is the "we don't need you" chant.
Yeah, obviously not.
Because that's going to feel... Let's not do that, City of Toronto. Honestly, we don't need you.
I don't know if this is too far, but it's just the way I feel and why I wouldn't do it. If it's anything, if it is like on the positive side of things, once the game actually starts, like, and he gets cheered when he touches the ball, that's going to be kind of cringeworthy for me.
Okay. If he touches the first time he touches the ball.
Sure. You get one.
Cheer.
You get one.
The big pop. And then you get the thank you, Kawhi, or something, right?
Yeah.
And then after that, raucous cheers on every miss.
Yes.
Every miss, the roof should pop off the place.
Yes.
Yeah.
And I don't know if he'd want it any other way.
Yeah.
All right. It's going to be a fun night tonight. Blake Murphy will be there. He of The Athletic joins us next. It's Good Show. Ben Annis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Back to Good Show. With Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
It's Good Show, Sportsnet 590, The Fan. Hello, Kawhi. I know you're listening. It's Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus.
Yeah, welcome.
Welcome back. Yeah. Good to have you. It's good to have Blake Murphy of The Athletic on the line right now. What's going on, Blake?
How are you guys doing?
We're doing well. How about this for a strategy for fans tonight? J.D. and I just talked about it. Huge ovation before the game, and yeah, you talked about there's going to be a ceremony well before 7 o'clock tonight. Yeah, like obviously, and I don't think there will be any divergent opinions on this. Everyone's going to cheer the bejesus out of Kawhi Leonard before the game. Ball goes up, maybe first touch, he gets a cheer. After that, booing. How is that for the correct response to Kawhi Leonard tonight?
I think the appropriate response, given Kawhi Leonard's personality, would just be complete silence when he touches the ball. I don't know if you can coordinate 19,000 people doing that, but that seems more in line with Kawhi's personality.
So we spent the top block of the show today looking forward to things, or at least looking at what has been left so far. Because, yeah, today is a lot about looking back and kind of trying to get some closure with Kawhi Leonard. But what do you think is the greatest residual impact of his year in Toronto?
Well, I think you see it on the roster right now, and I think you see it in some of, you know, obviously they haven't played well this last week, but there's a level of resiliency and a level of being able to pull games out. And I think you see the impact in guys like Pascal Siakam and Fred VanVleet. Obviously, Kyle Lowry and Marc Gasol were already very intelligent players and very experienced. But I think you see that kind of up and down the roster, that resolve and that, you know, Nick Nurse is very fond of saying they also got 2 months of games in. You know, that's extra high leverage situations for guys to learn in and grow in. So I think that's pretty obvious on the court and with the current team. And then, you know, in the bigger picture, more existentially, I think this is something we maybe feel the impact of over the next, you know, 10, 15 years, these new fans that were created during the championship run, similar to the two Blue Jays championships and the wave of fans that created, or similar to the Vince Carter effect and the wave of new players and new basketball fans that we're still seeing today.
So, in regards to, yeah, the lasting impact on the players and the fact that they have been resilient and been tough and won some games late this season, you know, save for the last four games have been kind of rough. But, yeah, before that, has that changed the way you view this game, that you expected to feel going into this game, the way this team has played this year?
Not really, no. I think, you know, in the downtimes, the concerns about the Raptors are still there. They don't have a lot of secondary shot creation around Siakam and the point guards. It's still unclear what the hierarchy is and what the plan is late in games on offense. So, you know, not a lot has changed. They've obviously overperformed expectations. I think they're on a 57-win pace. I had them right around 50. So they've impressed and they've been better. But I think some of the bigger picture, you know, limitations and some of the strengths that you expected are pretty much what we thought coming in here.
Yeah, it's a good point, right? Because you get wrapped up in this feeling of, yeah, maybe there's another championship potential with this team when they're beating the Lakers on the road without Kyle and Serge. But, yeah, this is really generally performing above expectations. We talked also about the memories of Kawhi Leonard, and obviously the one takeaway that everyone's going to have is the shot in Game 7 against the Philadelphia 76ers. Do you have one that's like maybe under the radar because you paid such close attention to this team naturally being on the beat last season, one that is kind of lasting for you that maybe doesn't come first to mind for most people?
It's not really one moment. It's just that entire run of takeover against the Bucks where there was, I think it was late third into the early fourth, and it was just, no, this is Kawhi time. He's taking over. It was just, you know, a stretch of play where you almost don't realize just how important a superstar of that level is until you see it. And then the absence of it afterward, it's like, oh, that's what was missing. That's what, you know, the previous iterations of the team didn't have. That's what it looks like when a superstar kind of puts you on their back. And that happened in the Philly series a lot as well. But there was that stretch in the Milwaukee, I can't remember now if it was game five or game six, I think it was game six, and he just kind of led that 26-3 run or whatever, and he had a couple back-to-back back-breaking buckets, culminating with the dunk on Giannis, obviously. That's the one that sticks out to me other than the shot.
Yeah, just how it was, oh, this game looks like they're going to lose this game, too. I think, yeah, he just went on an individual like 11-0 run to close the quarter. And then he sits on the bench and you're saying, oh, my God, they're in this game. They're maybe going to win this game. Yeah, man, I've been saying he's the first guy to really show the Raptors greatness, and that everything else before had been very, very good. And there were probably things that we underappreciated in hindsight because the championship happened so quickly. And, you know, the phases of going into that and building a roster that allowed yourself to go out and get Kawhi Leonard. But yeah, those moments are what's going to always resonate with people, is going to be looking back on Kawhi Leonard and remembering how great he was and how dominant he was, and that really the only runs you can compare him to are Jordan and, yeah, LeBron. There's not really an individual performance from start to finish quite like there has been with Kawhi Leonard. And do you think he'll ever have a run, or do you think he'll ever have a moment that will outshine his performance in Toronto, getting the ring in Toronto? Like, when we look back on Kawhi Leonard's career 20 years from now, and independent of being, you know, here, because clearly that's going to be the case, but on a whole, that is going to be the defining moment of his career.
I'm not sure. He's still got a lot of career left. Like, I think, you know, with him going home to LA, if they win one this year, obviously that's a little bit more shared with Paul George. But he would become, you know, the first player to win an NBA Finals MVP with three different teams. And it would be leading the Clippers back to somewhere they haven't been in a really long time. And it would be doing it at home. So for him, I think this year, or, you know, any time during his L.A. tenure, that could be bigger for him. I don't know that he's going to have a single moment bigger than a Game 7 walk-off, because that's literally never happened before up until this one. But I think in terms of importance to him, he could top it. You know, importance across the entire NBA landscape, I don't really know. I feel like this title with the Raptors was so unique and so kind of special and unexpected for the league in a year where everyone kind of thought the Warriors were going to win one more. I don't know if it would have the broader impact, but I could see it meaning more to Kawhi himself.
Talking to Blake Murphy, we also talked about the impact of the perception of this franchise as a whole and whether that's lasting. Do you think it is? Like, we talk about, yeah, like legitimacy of having the championship and they get the gold thing on the collar of the uniforms. That's all well and good. Like, is there now, like, this team is in a different echelon of franchises perception-wise after the 1 year of Kawhi?
Yeah, for sure. And I think that's something that's been building during Masai Ujiri's entire tenure. You know, obviously they kind of banged their head against the wall a couple times in the playoffs in the previous iteration of the rosters. But, you know, they had turned themselves from this perennial afterthought into a team that was in the playoffs every year, in the mix, had a smart, respected front office, had a couple of all-stars who chose to stay. So I think everything was pulling in that direction anyway. And then because the championship kind of validates the aggression and the moves of the front office and the coaching change, And then, you do have that banner and you do have the notch on the jersey. More and more people got to see the quality of the Toronto Raptors fan base as well. I think that all moves in the same direction. And Kawhi leaving maybe hurts that a little bit, but I think most people being reasonable kind of see that as it was an inevitability and the Raptors really couldn't have done much to change it in retrospect. So, I think it's something that the Raptors had already built themselves into a respectable organization and front office, and now they're part of that kind of elite club. Now, we'll see if that matters the next time they have cap space in 2021, because they haven't really had a chance in years to take a swing at trying to lure someone and see how much those changes have mattered. But I think it's certainly, you compare it to where they were 2 years ago and especially 7 years ago, they're in a much better place for that kind of thing.
Do you expect OG Anunoby to get his revenge tonight and poke Kawhi Leonard in the eye?
I do not. I think OG is too unbothered by things like that.
Yeah, I guess you're probably correct. Blake, this was great. Thanks, everybody.
Congrats on the book.
Thanks,
man.
Thanks for having me on, guys.
Again, go get Blake's new book, him and Carl English. We had English on last week. It sounds really interesting. And congrats on getting that done, man. It's Chasing a Dream, and it's in, I guess, every Canadian bookstore, and you can get it online. Can you get it? He's gone.
Yeah.
I was going to say.
You can get it anywhere.
Yeah. you can get it anywhere. Just Google it. Chasing a Dream, the Carl English story. It's co-written with Blake Murphy.
So, yeah, we will see what the lasting impact is with, like, actual free agent, elite-level, franchise-altering players. Mm-hmm. Because, yeah, one has never signed here. Mm-hmm. This was a trade against the guy's will. And he was a good pro, and he played the season out and worked out for him. That was a good move. Maybe that's a lasting impact in the NBA as far as guys that are traded to places they don't want to go. Maybe that's, like, the reason you should actually, you know, just suck it up and play. Although, I don't know if you need one if you're getting paid millions of dollars to play professional basketball.
Yeah, it also so dependent on the situation, right? That was such a tailor-made, incredible spot for Kawhi to go. Mm-hmm. He ends up with Alex McKechnie, where it was well-documented the trust that he put in him and how comfortable he felt with the medical staff. He ends up with Kyle Lowry, a all-star point guard, criminally underrated for, you know, half a decade, who completely assimilated his game to him and made him feel comfortable. There was never a tug and pull in terms of this is my team or this is my moment. And then a cast of players around him that fit brilliantly and who understood the parameters of who Kawhi Leonard was and let him be him and were an easygoing group. There's really no difficult personalities. They had a coach who wanted to empower him. Mm-hmm. They went out at the deadline and they acquired a future Hall of Famer to be the backstop of their defense. It was a pretty beneficial run for Kawhi Leonard as well. I think he's probably very happy with the results, even if he even if we had to parse through a photo on day one of the Kawhi Leonard in Toronto trade with is he smiling?
Yeah.
Is he holding?
Well, it all started with the Chris Haynes, like, yeah. He has no desire to play in Toronto, which, like,
I know
some people want to, they directed that tweet towards old takes exposed when the Raptors won the championship. It's like, well, how is that, how is that not true?
Yeah.
Like, he didn't have a desire. You know what he did? He sucked it up. He's like, it's cold. That sucks. I'm going to LA next year. I'm going to win a championship on my way out.
The old takes exposed were probably more the things about, you know, trading Kawhi, or that it was a bad trade from the beginning.
Or that he'd never play a game.
Yeah, those were tough.
Yeah. This is your cue to call for the Air Canada Fan Flight Contest. How would you like to fly on board the Air Canada Fan Flight to see the Raptors play in Phoenix? If you know five of Air Canada's ideal sporting destinations we announced over the past week, call us right now, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590. When we come back, Yankees are back to doing Yankee things. They land Garrett Cole on a record deal. And the Patriots are obvious cheaters. It's coming up next. It's a good show. Ben Annis, J.D. Vonkas, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. No medical exam or health questions will be asked. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. Now, more of Good Show.
Line it up, baby.
With Ennis and Bunkus.
Then do it to start the commotion.
On Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Groovy.
.946 Sportsnet 590 Fan. It's a good show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Vonkas. I imagine there's people now swarmed outside the Kawhi Thank You New Balance billboard at Yonge and Dundas. Probably got candles out there. Everybody wants to get their picture, post on social media. It's a good job by New Balance. Do you think that Kawhi Leonard was even alerted to the fact that New Balance was going to put that up there? Did he have to give the go-ahead? One thing's for certain in
Lance,
my mind.
Get the Who's the Bad Guy music or sounder ready, please.
One thing's for certain.
Uh-huh.
In my mind, at least, Kawhi Leonard didn't go to New Balance. Was like, hey, guys, whatever it takes, you know, take it out of the money you're paying me. Buy a billboard for a day at Yonge and Dundas that says thank you.
All right. Yeah. I don't want to be the, person who does this take, but. Yeah, am I the bad guy for being cynical about that billboard? Looking at that as a... Good for New Balance, because it's an incredible advertising opportunity for them.
Yeah, the whole Kawhi thing could not have worked better for them.
And I'm not someone who is sitting here on the perch of, why didn't Kawhi give us a farewell letter? You know, there was a lot of that. Remember, it was... Well, he slinked off in the middle of the night without kissing us goodbye. It was sad.
At his introductory news conference, he mentioned the Raptors. He didn't come here by choice. I think he did his best when he was here. That's my opinion.
My feelings about how Kawhi left are completely resolved. I have no, I wish it would have been. I wish there would have, blah, 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 blah. All those things are completely irrelevant to me.
Well,
he left.
I still wish. I wish he had stayed.
No, I wish he had stayed. I don't care about.
How? How he did it.
What he says about Toronto. Sure. I know Toronto is special to Kawhi. Nothing will ever convince me otherwise. He could sit there and tell you Toronto meant nothing. He was the guy. He didn't even pay any attention to any of the ancillary stuff. It was all be a lie. There was real connective tissue between the Raptors and Kawhi Leonard. I talked about this on the morning show today. I think that the mercenary thing shifted. Maybe not for him in terms of whether he was going to stay or go, but in terms of the way he perceived the city and the bond that he'll always have with Canada and being the king of the North, there's a permanence to that. There's a real connection there, and it's a two-way street. Kawhi Leonard, when he comes back here today, is going to have the feels.
Well,
you better believe that when he stands on that floor and he watches that video tribute and people chant King of the North, he's going to feel something.
And beyond that, even if he wins a couple of championships in L.A., like, he comes back here when his career's all said and done.
Dude, of course.
Yeah.
Of course, man. That said, the New Balance thing was nothing to me. So who's the bad guy? I saw that and said... did he, they, New Balance have to clear that with Kawhi? Mm-hmm. That's New Balance to me thanking Toronto.
Yeah.
Thank you, Toronto, for all of the purchases that you made. Thank you for all the Fun Guy shirts that everyone in the city and their brother and sister and stepmother have. We're so thrilled that you bought all of our products for as long as you did. We appreciate you. That wasn't cool. Like,
no.
It's a cool looking billboard, I guess, but I preferred the one that was Boardman gets rings,
yeah.
Boardman gets championships that I saw float up into the sky as I crushed public pints and watched fireworks.
Yeah, so
people smash
let me be clear. Let me be clear. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine.
Yeah, but it's a little embarrassing.
But anybody taking some extra meaning out of it, you know, that has no...
He took out a billboard for us.
Yeah, who's not media literate, right? Like, that's for the people who are like, you know what? Mm-hmm. Corporations are speaking to me.
Yeah.
They got the finger on my pulse.
Yeah.
It's like, no, that's all. It's fine.
Yeah.
It's fine. It's Young and Dundas. It's a billboard. But anybody that's like, that is...
Wow.
That, you know what?
It wasn't a classy move by Kawhi.
Yeah, it wasn't... I was left with some residual anger towards Kawhi because there wasn't enough formal recognizing of the Raptors, but now there is.
Yeah,
like that's bad. Don't do that.
Yeah, to me, on the eve of us teasing Vancouver about them feeling like they're, you know, the rivalry with Toronto or whatever, and the inferiority complex of Canucks fans when it comes to the Maple Leafs, I found it to be a little ironic that some Raptors fans reacted that way to a billboard paid for by a shoe company.
Yeah.
You need people like me so you can point your fingers.
Yeah, do you?
I say that's the bad guy.
Am I the bad guy for being cynical about the billboard? I'm not even cynical.
No.
I
you're media literate.
Yeah, I thought people posting it and, wow, so cool.
Yeah, it's a great ad campaign by New Balance. Mm-hmm. They've made millions of dollars off Kawhi Leonard. They've been really smart about how they've gone about it. So smart, in fact, that people don't even realize that they are a corporation trying to make money off you.
Do you think that in Houston, when Gerrit Cole takes out his billboard, they're going to be thrilled?
Here's the thing. Gerrit Cole's not doing that. You know why?
Because he hates it there.
He
looks back on Houston as nothing but a pit stop for between him and $300 million.
Yeah.
What did he end up getting? 352?
No, not that much.
How much was it? I remember looking at it and it like almost popped my eyes out of my skull, and then I looked away from it.
It's not only the biggest contract ever, both in AAV and total value for a pitcher of any sort. It's the biggest AAV of any player contract ever given out. 9 years, $324 million, $36 million per annum until the man is 38 years old.
Must be nice.
So.
Oh, must be
It's
nice.
Obviously bad in so many different ways.
Who
right?
cares? Is it bad?
No, I didn't see
Yankees fans being.
Oh, I wasn't even
what's
talking.
What's it going to look like when he's 36? No.
That's not even what I'm
Will
talking about.
Will he ever spend again?
No, that's not what I'm talking about. But like in a decade, what is $36 million? You know.
Probably nothing.
Nothing.
We'll be making that. Then.
Yeah, probably. I'm not even talking about that. I'm talking about, as a Blue Jays fan, you know, you have to face this guy now four times a year. That's not great.
And Are we going to get Jake Odorizzi next year?
Yeah,
to
probably
go
not.
Against Gerrit Cole?
Whatever. And the Gerrit Cole joins a team that had like 110 wins last season. That's all bad. It's all very bad. But it is nice because you of all people, and maybe you started to shift by the end of the year. We're talking about this Yankees team. You know what? They're the Yankees. And they play in the same division, and they're the bad Yankees, but it's just hard to dislike this team.
Oh, I hate them.
Oh, it is back on.
Oh, you must have me confused with some other person.
No, I would love to roll back the tapes of, like, the playoffs of 2 years ago, right?
Oh, I was cheering for them two years ago. And you know what?
They saw such a scrappy bunch, and who would hate Aaron Judge?
Hey, so first of all, my favorite Yankee, Didi, is gone.
Yeah, he is gone.
And best name in the league, Didi.
Mm-hmm.
Shout out Dexter's Laboratory fans. Second of all, history actually looks kindly on me rooting for the Yankees against the Astros. Who's the bad guy?
Yeah.
Astros. Astros the whole time. The Astros are so villainous, they found a way to be worse than the Yankees.
You need people like me so you can point your fingers.
Yeah.
Astros. That's the bad guy.
Yes, you, Astros, you're the bad guy. You're stumbling out of the restaurant. The Yankees are actually the nice people trying to enjoy their dinner. The wealthy people looking at you saying, oh, this is a disgraceful event. Ooh, stick your nose up at this behavior. Yeah, back to hating the Yankees is full on. I cannot wait for tonight on Sportsnet. Tanner Roark takes the mound. On the other side, Garrett Cole. Will Tanner Roark be able to shut down Aaron Judge, Gary Sanchez, and the Yankees' bats? We'll find out next on Sportsnet Blue Jays Baseball. Ta-tang, ta-tang, ta-tang. Yankees win 13-1 in the least shocking event of all time. Enjoy your season's tickets.
So not only are they back to being a fully operational Death Star, as Hal Steinbrenner said this past offseason, which is fine. Yeah, it's good. It's good to have everybody directing their hate in one direction.
Yeah.
But this guy, Garrett Cole.
Yeah, he's the number one villain on the villain team. He's captain of the villains.
Freaking Cole.
He's kingpin.
They lose games out to the Washington Nationals. And yeah, he knows he's going to get paid, and he knows he didn't get into that game, and he was kind of upset. But in the seconds preceding the end of that baseball game where you were nine innings away from winning a World Series title, your first in your career, first of all, you don't think it's incumbent upon you to even speak to the media because you're not even a member of the team anymore.
Not as a joke.
No, like, he's like, do I really have to do this?
The most awkward was the media guy who went, ha, ha, ha.
He's like, no, I'm serious.
Yeah.
And then, so serious were you, and so prepared for that moment were you, that you just went into your backpack, pulled out the Boris Corporation hat, plunked it on your head, and said, I don't play for the Astros anymore. I play for Team Garrett Cole.
By the way, I hadn't really considered this until you brought this up.
Yeah.
So he went to the ballpark
with
Game 7 World Series before he left the house. His girlfriend, Garrett, do you have your Scott Boris hat? Thank you. Right. Scott, how could I forget? Most important thing of the night. Glove. Got that. Got my chewing gum and Scott Boris Corp hat for if we lose this ball game to immediately shut it down and show people exactly what kind of level jerk I am. Check. Okay. See you later. Or do you think he's so brutal he just has a Scott Boras hat always there at all times, and he's just always ready to just throw the Astros under the bus and immediately put a Boras hat on the second things go wrong?
No, I think it was the first one.
Before
we leave this topic, and I know it's late.
Yeah, we gotta go.
No, I know. But that's also the reason why he's going to be successful in New York. He has no soul. Yeah. He's like, I don't care. You boo me because I had a bad start. Screw you.
The soulless demon is going to be good for the Yankees. Oh, what a surprise. Quelle surprise.
All right, when we come back, good show's Leafs Hour brought to you by Drive Auto Group. Fueled by customer expectations, Ben Annis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Now, back to Good Show on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Good show, Sportsnet 590 The Fan, Ben Annis, J.D. Bunkus. What a month of basketball for Raptors fans. Get Kawhi's return, who's doing his media availability right now. We'll give you anything that is interesting that comes out of it.
A lot of people, right now?
Yeah, it's happening right now. Twitter.
No.
What? Well, I mean, it's not broadcast live.
We'll just read the tweets, everyone. Please don't leave.
There's nowhere to go. So it's a big day. And you get the Christmas Day game.
Yeah.
Later on this month. Raptors and Boston Celtics, who they will be battling with in the Eastern Conference, already lost once to this year.
And like we talked about in the first block, it's about maintaining that relevancy as long as you can, keeping that relevant window open as long as possible, because these things can be fleeting, right? And we're going to talk to Richard Jefferson and just about how things changed in Cleveland and how you can have things different. I know that some of them are, you know, having with Sai Ujiri.
Well, and some of them is, being more of a one-man team than the Raptors were with Kawhi Leonard.
Yes, absolutely. Abso-freaking-lutely. They also lost Kyrie right after, too.
Yeah.
That didn't exactly help. They turned Kyrie into Colin Sexton and...
Yeah, but they still had... but they did have J.R. Smith.
Yeah, they did. They did have him. The thing for Kawhi Leonard that he probably would never say publicly or even acknowledge... is this is going to still, to me, always be his moment. This will always be the one that was most about Kawhi Leonard. Because even if he wins in L.A., it's hard for me to envision a scenario where he's as dominant as he was for this playoff run. And there's a couple of reasons for that. One is that he plays with guys who command the ball more to be effective. So if he wins a championship, Paul George gets more of a stake in that championship than any other Raptor did with this run.
That's right.
Same goes for, and not as much so, but how is Lou Williams good? Lou Williams helps you when he's taking shots, when he's trying to go for his 20 a game. That's how he's effective. And that happens when Kawhi Leonard isn't on the floor. But to a large degree, if those two guys are playing together in crunch time, there's probably some moments where, and this is a good design of the Clippers, that he's going to get the ball and he's going to be asked to take some closing shots, and maybe it won't be Kawhi in some spots.
Mm-hmm.
A buzzer beater moment like the one against Game 7, a Game 6 like he had against the Bucks with that iconic dunk, and then ending a dynasty with the Golden State Warriors and getting an organization's first championship where really the entire narrative was about Kawhi Leonard and his run, I don't think it's replicable. I don't really see how that ends up happening in LA. So when he steps back and he looks at everything in his career, this is why Toronto will still always matter to Kawhi. This is when he became more of an individual. With San Antonio, he was Kawhi. He was the San Antonio project.
He was part of that organization and the way they do things.
Exactly. He was a byproduct of a long system that they had built. He was the right choice because that organization is intelligent and they helped mold him in a certain way, right?
Mm-hmm.
He fit into their culture. He did what they asked of him to do. Toronto was the spot where it was Kawhi independent of that, Kawhi doing it all on his own, Kawhi elevating himself to an area where we could compare him with Michael Jordan and LeBron James. And we'll see. If he wins a third championship with a third different team, there's going to be a conversation about where he ranks in the pantheon of greatest NBA players. Bill Simmons' Book of Basketball podcast is going to have an addendum with Kawhi Leonard and his what this accomplishment means in basketball. But in terms of one brilliant individual run, when we look back on Kawhi Leonard's career, I feel as though even if you are not from Canada, this is going to be the run you remember.
Let's also not get it twisted, because I know eventually the supporting cast turned it around and Fred VanVleet just hit every three that he took for the second half of the Bucks series and all of the finals and ended up getting a finals MVP vote. And Kyle Lowry, he was great in game six as well, starts off the game with the incredible run up into and including game seven of that Sixers series. Kawhi Leonard was doing what LeBron James did in six games against the Golden State Warriors in that first playoff run where he had no Kevin Love and he had no Kyrie Irving and like was a legit possibility to be finals MVP in a losing effort, not even in seven games. He was doing that for two rounds. I mean, the Magic were not on the level of the Raptors, but like that entire seven-game series against a team that could have won it all last year in the Philadelphia 76ers, just about nobody showed up offensively. And there were times where that team was, I mean, running a six-man rotation. Fred wasn't in it.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that was all Kawhi Leonard.
My one thing about the Sixers series, and, man, we forget so many things, because you remember the brilliance, you remember the highs of the highs. The perception going into the Sixers series was the Raptors should handle them.
Yeah. Yeah.
That Embiid had been hurt,
mm-hmm.
and he hadn't looked the same. And that ultimately the Raptors were still supposed to have more talent in that group. I think that's the way it was being pushed. The Raptors were on a high. They
handled them during the regular season. Yeah,
that this was supposed to be not an easy out. Mm-hmm. But I think they were something around -260 favorites to win that series.
Mm-hmm.
And then it ended up being a lot closer because of star power. And it was once again a wake-up call for the city of what it was like to have a star, what it was like to have the best player on the court, and how impactful that can be in an NBA game.
Now, the only pushback I'll have to the Kawhi Leonard legacy talk and what we'll remember him for, because like obviously
he beats LeBron and the Lakers would be. Is that it?
Well, I mean, it's that franchise that he went to. If he went to the Lakers, like, there's just no case. Like, yeah, like, oh, yeah, you're going to usurp the rest of that franchise's history with, like, a moment that is iconic more so than any of the incredible moments they've had. No, you're taking, not on the same level, but you're doing a bit of a Red Sox Cubs thing with the Clippers. The the younger brother, the irrelevant franchise, playing in the same building as one of the most iconic franchises in all of North American professional sports. You changed everything for them. And if we're going to have that conversation about that season changing the perception of the Toronto Raptors from a wider perspective, then that's definitely on the table for the Clippers. It's probably already there.
Yeah, my only thing is I actually think that if we're looking back on Kawhi, if just from a Kawhi perspective, had he gone to the Lakers, it still would have been more likely that's what we remember his career for. Because then he would have been with LeBron James and Anthony Davis, and we would have put them in a conversation of, was that the most dominant team of all time? And while maybe it wasn't just strictly about him, when we looked back on his career, we would have remembered him more for the Lakers teams that would have been way more in the public eye from the get-go. It would have been the conversation's already about the Lakers every single day, all the time anyways. Imagine what it would have been with this team as good as they are had it been that three-headed monster. We would have been comparing them to the Heat teams and saying who was better. Were they better than the Cavaliers three guys? How many rings are these guys going to get? When is LeBron going to cede control to one of these two guys? Who's the number two?
Yeah.
It would have been nonstop Kawhi. So, yeah, I think that there's probably more meaning from a how do I put this? There's probably more meaning to Clippers fans. Like, the highs that he can bring them to are untouched. The best thing that they've ever had was Lob City, and I think the deepest that team ever went was in the second round.
Mm-hmm.
And it's mostly a story of disappointment and missed opportunities. But ultimately, the greater narrative, once he decided to go to the Clippers, and once Paul George went there, I think it very quickly became, it's next near impossible for Kawhi Leonard to elevate his stature the way that when we close our eyes and think of Kawhi, that it won't be here in Toronto, regardless of where you're from.
Yeah, it's just about maintaining now. Yeah. Like, that's the pinnacle. Nobody's going to have a run like he had and win a championship and knock off a team that was so heavily favored, even without Kevin Durant in the finals like Kawhi Leonard did. And I'm excited to see how it looks tonight against the Toronto Raptors. All right, we're trying to hook up with Richard Jefferson. He's meeting with the rest of the broadcast crew, getting ready for tonight's game, which is on ESPN. And he's also going to be part of that Christmas Day game against the Boston Celtics. Raptors not playing their best basketball right now either. Mm-hmm. It's been a bit of an issue. And we're doing game-to-game evaluations of what this team could be and what its ceiling is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think, listen, I'll just speak for myself. What I thought this might look like when I saw this game on the schedule and understood the significance of Kawhi Leonard returning to this franchise,
mm-hmm.
I thought, yeah, all the pregame stuff, that would all be good, and I knew the feelings we'd have, and I'd still would have told you, yeah, cheers before the game and then boos during the game. But I would have never thought that even if, like, a one-off, you knock off the Clippers or you hang with them, that that means much of anything, that this team is more – it's just a fine team, but not one with higher aspirations than that. I feel like I have more emotional equity on the result of this game than I ever thought I would going into this season.
But is that because of Kawhi, or is that because you want to see the Raptors beat?
Because the Raptors they've overachieved and shown me enough in limited sample so far this season.
But yeah, that's what I'm asking you. It's because we haven't seen them really have a lot of success this year against good teams.
Yeah.
Like I said, they're 3-7 against the best teams they've played.
Mm-hmm.
And in those games, Pascal Siakam's been a 40% from the field guy.
Mm-hmm. And the Clippers have struggled on the road as well. They hung in that game on the back end of back-to-backs after beating the Lakers on that road trip earlier this season. 1-12 sports, it's 11-12. Let's not get ahead of myself. It's 11-12 Sportsnet 5-9 The Fan. It's Good Show. Ben Ennis, JD Bunkus. Let's bring in Chris Haynes, senior NBA insider for Yahoo, on the line right now. Chris, thanks for doing this.
Oh, anytime, guys.
So, yeah, when you had the report that was so interesting to many that Kawhi Leonard had no desire to play in Toronto when Masai Ujiri pulled off that trade, how did you see that season playing out for Kawhi Leonard?
I really didn't know. You know, I obviously knew that, you know, he would report the team and do what he had to do. But it was just an awkward situation because we knew going in, like, where he wanted to be. We knew he wanted to be in L.A. He made that clear in his trade request to the Spurs. And, you know, knowing Kawhi, I knew, like, he wasn't a fan of cold weather. And so So it was like you add all those elements and those dynamics, and then when that trade went through to Toronto, it was like, I wonder how this is going to play out. But, you know, he went in, you know, he was a, you know, he did his job. He was a leader. It was an awkward situation because I think everybody knew, like, this was kind of like a real true rental situation. But he made the most of it. You know, I don't think anybody, you know, saw what saw before it happened, you know, what eventually did happen, and that's getting the city a championship.
Yeah. Do you think there was ever a tipping point with him in terms of his buy-in to Toronto? Because, yeah, early on when people said he didn't want to be here, I'm guessing that he probably still hadn't even given up on the possibility of still being moved by the Raptors somewhere else, or using this almost as a checkpoint before flipping over to L.A. Did you ever hear of, or were you ever indicated as to a moment where Kawhi really started to buy in and appreciate the at least opportunity he had to win in Toronto?
I never heard at any point during the season that he was looking to get out, you know, during that season. You know, once the trade was made, you know, he had time, you know, to process things, and, you know, he was fully committed to, you know, doing what he had to do at that time in Toronto. And I think the Raptors did a great job and making him feel welcome, you know, the training staff, building trust. You know, it was kind of the low management was kind of started there. And, you know, he even said that, you know, he wouldn't be able to perform at a high level last postseason if it wasn't for the way they maintenance him during the regular season. So, you know, there was definitely trust built, obviously, but it just wasn't the ideal situation for him to be all the way over there. But, you know, he played like a pro. You know, him and his Uncle Dennis, I think they definitely, you know, gathered friends over there. And I think it was the best. They made the best out of the situation. But there was never a point where he was still looking to get out during that season. I was not told that.
We're talking to Chris Haynes, senior NBA insider for Yahoo. And you mentioned the health and the way that they managed him. And there's more load management this year with the Clippers. But Kawhi, there's been some stretches where he's looked kind of like the version after game three of the Bucks series, where he was kind of dragging a little bit. He looks sometimes a bit hobbled. Do you have an understanding of where Kawhi's health is at today and whether that Raptors run took a toll?
Yeah, obviously they keep that stuff pretty private. Kawhi really doesn't talk about it. But now with the NBA kind of banning the term load management, you know, Clippers have been forced to, you know, come out and say, you know, there is a knee injury. And that was the same knee, he kind of banged up last postseason. He was dealing with that in the playoffs last year. I can't remember what series that was, but, you know, we saw him limping a little bit. And so it's still that same knee. I don't think he's ever going to be a guy right now that's going to be able to play anywhere close to 82 games a season. And so I think the Clippers looked at the Toronto Raptors blueprint, and they're implementing that and doing it even more. Just trying to make sure they keep him as happy as possible and healthy as possible going into the postseason.
And that's, Kawhi Leonard's going to use the regular season as a preamble for the postseason. That's what he's all about.
And I would assume that Steve Ballmer is very happy cutting any check to the NBA.
Whatever.
Sitting Kawhi.
He don't care. He did leave. We've spent a lot of today talking about perception. He left this franchise after they won a championship and he had a chance to run it back. And we know the reasons why, and they're all understandable. But did that have any impact? Are people able, do you think, you're able to separate that, like this individual circumstance, from a franchise that has lost some big name free agents in the past? Like, what is the perception after Kawhi left this organization?
You know, that's a good question. It's kind of hard for me to answer that. You know, I'm not in Toronto a ton, but you know, I remember before the finals were over, I was like kind of thinking, I was like, man, if the Raptors won, I felt like it would be a better chance that he would return. you know, just to run it back. And I'm like, how can you leave after a championship? But then my colleague, you know, here at Yahoo, you know, Syrette, who I'm pretty sure y'all had on a few times, mm-hmm. she was like, nah, I think he'd bounce. If he won a championship, I think he'd bounce. Like, the city, this is something they've never experienced before. If he gets from that, like, he doesn't owe him anything. And I started looking at them, like, okay. You know, then, I spoke to Uncle Dennis. You know, he actually went on record with me. It was right after the Eastern Conference Finals. You know, he was just talking about, like, went back in time and talked about what happened with San Antonio, because nobody really spoke about that publicly, about what happened. And, you know, he told me, you know, trust, was broken. And he just wanted, you know, Kawhi wanted to play, and for an organization to just question, you know, he didn't want to be out there, you know, on the court with his teammates. You know, that was just like the straw that broke the camel's back, and he knew it was time to go. And, you know, he talked about how great, you know, how Toronto was treating him and things of that nature. And so when I got off the phone with him, I started thinking and realized, I'm like, huh, I guess that scenario could play out. If they did win the championship, they could still bounce, because L.A. was always, you know, on their mind. And but I just got to commend Kawhi in his camp for the way he handled that. They focused in on that one season. They did what they had to do. And San Antonio, I know for sure they never envisioned him going. You know, they felt like they'll send him to one of the coldest destinations, and knowing his preference. And I think they knew they couldn't envision that he would go off and do what he did that one season in Toronto.
Yeah, it's still, to me, one of the biggest benefits in terms of what we're talking about, lasting impacts of how people view Toronto, is Kawhi delivering the championship also allowed people in a winter sport to see what Toronto's like in the summer. Like, there was video of our parade, and you actually got to see, hey, oh, it gets nice there, huh? Oh, that's interesting.
It's not always February.
Yeah, it's not always ice cold. It's not always the Serge Ibaka video of him walking through the snowstorm in his parka. That's nice. Garage to garage, we don't have to talk about that. Yeah, and I think that it's a very small minority of the fan base that has any residual hard feelings towards Kawhi in terms of the departure and free agency. Like, the Toronto Maple Leafs ended up landing a massive free agent the year before, in John Tavares, who was from Toronto, and everyone understood that, you know, the allure of going home and the desire to be home, and that Kawhi being so close with his family, that this was a decision that was more about them than it even was an individual choice in him, that it was greater than basketball. No one begrudged him of that. But the thing I think people still wonder about is the meeting in Toronto during his free agency, when they left the jet and Kawhi flew in and there was all the helicopters. It made national news. They're following him all the way to Yorkville. And then, because afterwards, Masai Ujiri seemed a little sour about the way things had been, I guess, portrayed to him. Do you have any insight as to why it seemed as though he felt there was not the same level of honesty from Kawhi's camp when they had those negotiations right before he ended up going to the Clippers?
I want to caution, I would only be assuming at this point, but I think, like, you know, shoot, I think the Lakers pitched a fit as well. Felt like, you know, things were asked of them that was unreasonable. And I can only assume that the Raptors might have felt the same way, or felt like, you know, look, Kawhi was going to L.A., you know, and I think when you go into these free agency meetings, you know, when you're the team, you're trying to pitch your team, your franchise, you hope that you have everybody's attention, that you have everybody's open, you know, everybody has an open mind. And I think maybe, you know, the Raptors felt like they didn't have that, you know, like, but kind of felt like he was already, you know, 2 feet in to L.A., one of those teams. And so, I will only be assuming, but, you know, I would probably think that was the case. Maybe things were asked for that were unreasonable, but it kind of felt like, you know, this wasn't a realistic situation of him returning, and probably felt, you know, maybe it was a waste of time. But like I said, I will only be assuming. I'm just trying to put the pieces together of the puzzle. It was a frustrating situation for, you know, Lakers as well, you know, going through that situation. I remember talking with LeBron and AD during Summer League in Las Vegas, and they felt really good. Like, I asked them about, you know, what's the chances? They didn't say we got them or anything, but they were just like, gave me a smile. They felt really good. So, you know, it was a couple of franchises that had their heart broken this summer.
Yeah, it wasn't great. But you know what? Today will be a great day.
But everyone got to learn the lesson of never underestimate Kawhi in any capacity.
Yeah,
and that was like the last.
Never
thing.
Think you know what Kawhi is going to do.
Yeah. And you're the man who knows more than anybody else.
Yep. We appreciate you joining us today, Chris. Thanks for this.
Thanks, man.
Bye, guys. Y'all take care.
All right, you too. Chris Haynes, senior NBA insider for Yahoo. I got that sent. Like, he's obviously not doing reporting on the meeting between Kawhi and Masai Ujiri, but you read some of the quotes from Chris's story in the summer after all was said and done, after talking to Kawhi Leonard. I mean, this is just one of the quotes from Kawhi. For me, it was a family situation more so than a basketball decision. Basketball is going to be here long without me. So I feel like when we're here, we just have to make sure we share it with our loved ones, and that's one of the big reasons why I came to the Clippers. Like, that's what are you going to say to that? Like, that has nothing to do with what the Raptors can offer, unless they're moving his entire family here to a compound that is in a biodome, climate controlled. Anyone claiming to have lineage to Kawhi Leonard, get on the jumbo jet. We've bought an acre, after multiple acres of land north of the city. We've created a giant bubble. And you're all going to live there.
Here's the thing. We knew. This was the way it was all along, and we tricked ourselves. He bought that home in Los Angeles, and it was, well, he's just could be his off-season home. It's far away from the stadium.
It was in San Diego, buddy.
It's far away.
It wasn't
away.
In L.A.
He'd have to drive about an hour, which
no,
in
it
Toronto,
was 2 hours. I don't think it's even. Is he living there during the season?
Who knows, man? Again, we just talked to Chris Haynes, who knows him better than anybody. And
should have asked
him. Still doesn't have the clarity on whether or not what exactly happened in that meeting. That would be my guess, too, is this is why Masai was sour. And again, guess. Kawhi had that letter in the chamber about going to Los Angeles and it being a family decision. And did he consider Toronto like he just said to the media? Of course he did. How could he not?
Yeah.
There's no way that he didn't at least ponder on it or think about it.
Well, he hadn't heard the Clippers pitch yet either.
But I think that's probably why Masai felt a bit annoyed in the moment, is that they probably tried to pull all these strings. They were willing to do all this stuff. They were trying to accommodate this guy, do whatever was within their power. And that ultimately it felt like they strung them out. And really, this could have just been solved on day one of free agency, essentially, had he just been like,
hey,
I'm going to L.A. Mm-hmm. Don't worry about any of this. The pitches, the plane, the expectations of the fan base, all this stuff. Move on. Turn the chapter. I'm going to one of those two teams.
Yeah. Except he wouldn't have done that because he still needed leverage. Time for the Paul George thing to play out.
But that's why using the leverage, using the Raptors as leverage, after the run that they had just gone on, and after all of the clarity that Masai had provided for Kawhi, after all of the protection that the organization had given him from any type of questioning of his future and blah, 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 never pressuring him, all those things, load management, they probably had felt as though they had reached a different standard of where they were at with the communication with him.
Yeah.
And that when that happened and you feel like you were used for leverage, when you get the call from Sam Presti about the Thunder pieces, you're probably feeling a little like, wait, you wanted us to trust you. We trusted you. We thought this was a two-way street. Turned out it wasn't exactly what we thought it was. And that's what sports are now.
Business. Yeah. Apparently they're all good, though, because Masai's kid and Kawhi's kid were going to have a play date this morning.
Cool.
Who knows if that happened. Hey, awesome. WWE's live holiday tour hitting Toronto on the 28th. Right now you can win a pair of tickets. If you're the fifth caller through, call us right now, 416-870-0590, 1-888-666-0590, or *590 on your cell. Find our contest rules at sportsnet.ca/590. When we come back, hoping to hook up with Richard Jefferson. It's Good Show, Ben Annis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
Subscribe to our radio shows at iTunes or with your favorite podcatcher. Do not settle. Demand. Demand. Sportsnet 590 The Fan on demand. More of Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590 The Fan.
good show, Sportsnet 590, the Fan, Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus. How cool would it be if the Raptors just take the Clippers to the woodshed tonight? Yes, tonight. And Kawhi gets lauded, and he's got his ring, and he's just so emotional. He's just overwhelmed with emotion, and he puts up like a 2 for 20. Mm-hmm. I'd be down with that. The game is on ESPN. You can watch the reigning finals MVP, Kawhi Leonard, back in Toronto. ESPN's doubleheader tonight starts at 7 p.m. Play-by-play commentator Mark Jones calling the action with analyst Doris Burke and our next guest, Richard Jefferson, who had a front row seat to watch LeBron James take the Raptors to the woodshed a couple times in the playoffs. Richard on the line right now. What's going on, Richard? Thanks for doing this.
Not the Toronto woodshed.
Oh, my pleasure. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
The doing the radio show, not the...
Yeah, no. Not thank you for, letting LeBron spin the ball. Yeah. That was... Don't do that.
Yeah, did you ever say to LeBron, maybe privately, hey, you know, how about some sportsmanship? You know, they have so little now, and, you know, you're kind of crushing their souls. Did you ever, you know, take that upon yourself as a veteran?
No, because he's always looking upward, not downward.
Yeah. Oh.
He's like trying to figure out who he can get versus like who doesn't have enough.
Yeah, that was rude. The ball spinning, the beer drinking, but it's all gone now. Yeah. It's all
we're champions.
Yeah, we'll never scrub that memory clean. We were talking about those Cleveland teams earlier, though. Not in that reference. It's just that so Cleveland wins a ring. They keep LeBron the season afterwards, and yet I know that there's turnover. But now the Cavs feel more irrelevant than, I don't know, they have in a really long time. And I wanted to ask you, as someone who's a part of it, how does the impact of a championship sustain with the turnover in the NBA or professional sports in general? Or is that just fool's gold for non-premier franchises?
No, I wouldn't say it's fool's gold. I think that for certain franchises, it depends on the kind of who's on your team and if it can be sustained. You look at the Warriors run started when those guys were all very young and under contract. Draymond Green, Klay Thompson, Steph Curry. Those guys were all under contract, so it was easier for them to sustain a longer run where, you know, Kawhi shows up after being traded 1 year. So it was like, this is going to be a little bit harder to sustain. But there was so much talent here. Pascal Siakam, all of the young talent that you guys have here, it's a little bit easier to sustain because those guys have actually stepped up and really helped lead the franchise post-Kawhi.
Richard, we're just going to try and reconnect with you because we're having a little bit of a cell phone issue. Because I think we can improve on that.
We can.
It's always a fine line as to, like, do we want to let Richard... and understand every third word. It's like, can we get to like the two out of every three words?
I understood all the words. It was just the robot in between, the static mice. We will get there with technology someday.
Yeah.
We're so close. Mm-hmm. We're so close. What I thought when we had the AT&T, can you hear me now, guy, that we were there. We had arrived. No more of this.
No.
And yet, no. We're almost there.
Yeah, we're very close. But
almost
I think
we're there. Not quite.
The takeaway I got from that response was, it's about the players, man.
Right. I think it's more, to me anyways, is that how you maintain relevancy when you lose some of those players. If you can actually sustain it from the standpoint of, well, you can elevate who you are as a franchise and the perception around you long term. And it does really coincide with the team Kawhi left first. Mm-hmm. Is that, you know, the more relevant discussion is about the Spurs because they thought they had it lined up with their next star.
Right.
That was Kawhi was going to carry the Spurs into, God, the next decade. Mm-hmm. And he was the perfect... we thought he was the perfect Spur, that he was someone who wanted to be there, didn't want the limelight, was willing to be, you know, overshadowed by other peers, and that he just wanted to play for the Spurs. And then he leaves there. They're without a superstar. They still turn over good players. They have Aldridge, and they had DeRozan, and they've got some young players and DeJounte Murray who are exciting. And yet the Spurs are no longer part of the national conversation. And do you think people are going to get pulled into playing for the Spurs anymore? Like, do you think that's going to be a thing?
I mean, they still have Greg Popovich, right?
But I know. But how long will Popovich coach for?
Well, okay, so they still have some semblance, some connection to the past. And you know what? He's still a kingmaker, I suppose, with Team USA. Mm. Like, there's still the connection there.
I don't think that if you're one of the best players, if
you're like, I just want to make sure
that I'm going to get my minutes on Team USA. LeBron's not too worried about it. That's just it. Is that, are we fools to think that any franchise that is not the Lakers or Celtics and still the Knicks will ever have that type of allure? This, no matter how many championships you win, how many rings you
maybe
have.
We're doing it in the wrong direction, right? Like, maybe you're looking too much at the positive. Like, are the Raptors now this destination? No. But are they now, like, the idea of them acquiring a star, holding on to a star, isn't, you don't get laughed out of the room anymore with that. All right, Richard is back on the line right now. We're going to do this right. But we were talking about the players and, like, yeah, how the players are, like, important. And this sounds right. This sounds good. Like, yeah. I feel like I'm very happy about the possibility of the next five or so minutes. it all comes down to the players, the culture thing and your perception. Do the Raptors have the players to keep this rolling? Is this what you expected out of this matchup when you saw this on the schedule that you were going to be broadcasting this game?
Well, I think ultimately you were in a space where you wanted to see the growth of Pascal Siakam, the growth of the younger players, you know, VanVleet. Those are the guys that you wanted to see. If those guys took steps in the right direction, which they have, with Serge Ibaka, with Marcus Gasol, this is a very, very talented team in the Eastern Conference. So I'm glad that, you know, obviously Kyle Lowry, who's been a multi-time All-Star, I think Kyle Lowry is one of those guys that when he's healthy and locked in, the whole situation runs very, very smoothly. So I'm not surprised that those guys are, you know, sustaining what, prior teams have built, and that includes the DeMar DeRozan-led teams.
So chemistry, conference, and talent in mind. If this just came down to a basketball decision for Kawhi Leonard between the Clippers and the Raptors, based on what you know right now, do you think he made the right choice from just purely a basketball decision?
Purely a basketball decision, I think it's very, very close, because I think if he had stayed in the Eastern Conference, he would have a straight shot to the final. That being said, I think the team in LA is a little bit better, but they have a lot more obstacles to overcome to get out of that conference. So it depends on how you want to look at it. But one thing that I think people need to understand with a guy like Kawhi in this situation, this is the first time in his life he had an opportunity to choose where to play. He was drafted by San Antonio, re-signed in San Antonio, and traded to Toronto. So when an individual has an opportunity to choose, and if that means playing at home, if that means playing in front of your family, like, there's so many things. You look at Kyrie Irving decided to go back home. When you look at it from that standpoint, I think you're a little bit more sympathetic. Like, wait, this guy's been playing in the NBA for 10 years and he's never had an opportunity to choose where he wanted to be. If you look at it from that perspective, I think it's a little bit understanding. Had he just decided to up and go to Chicago because there was no affiliation to that city, I think there would probably be, I can understand people being a little frustrated with that.
Oh, yeah. And that's how it was when there were, like, little rumors that leaked out during Kawhi's free agency, and none of them ended up really being true. But I think one of them was that maybe he was going to take a meeting with the Knicks or the Sixers.
Oh, Sixers, yeah. One and, felt real.
And, yeah, that would have made people sour. It actually would have been such an interesting reception tonight had that actually happened. I don't even know if there would have been cheers beforehand. But everyone understood the parameters of being home. And, you know, we had Chris Haynes on just before you came on with us. And, you know, in speaking with him, it feels like people should almost be even happier that Kawhi even gave this a chance from the outset because of the power that he wielded and the fact that he could have just simply said, I'm going to sit out. You got to move me to L.A. You have to be the conduit to making this happen for me, even if the Spurs wouldn't do it. And, yeah, everyone gets going home. Everyone thinks that he has a better co-star in Paul George as of right now than I think where Siakam is currently at with his game. But that also lends itself to, do you think that Kawhi, one, based on the brilliance of his play, and two, based on, like, the composition of his team in the market, that when his career is over, that it's probably more likely than not the Raptors were the seminal moment in his career?
Well, at this point in time, the answer is yes, right? If you know, in 5 years and he's won a championship in L.A., you know, then he becomes the first player to win a finals MVP or, you know, a championship with three different teams. I think the Raptor moment was because it was huge for the country. It was unexpected. They went against the Dynasty Warriors. There were so many elements that made this story so impactful and so special that right now, yes, I think, but he's done that multiple times. Like, he was 22 years old, I believe, when he won his first Finals MVP. And then now here he is, you know, as a leader and a veteran showing up, right? No chemistry, no nothing, not having played the year before, and wins, you know, the first championship for the Raptors. Like, that, those are two pretty big pivotal moments. And so, you know, it's hard to connect the dots looking forward, but, you know, right now, if he would have never played basketball again, like, obviously this would probably be the great defining moment of his career. But, you know, he's probably got 6 or 7 really good years left in him.
Yeah, and we'll see. And, yeah, if he gets that Clippers franchise, its first championship, maybe that's it as well. Talking to Richard Jefferson, he's on the call tonight on ESPN. Also has the Christmas Day game, which will be fun. Raptors first ever against the Boston Celtics. Before we let you go.
That's our real championship, by the way.
Yeah, so, you know. Well, let's see. Unless the Raptors get through the East again. But, yeah, you left a year before LeBron, or you retired a year before LeBron left in Cleveland. But I'm sure you were in touch with those guys when he left. And we all understood the reasons. And he won a championship and brought the first of that franchise. We get all those good things. But, like, was there any percentage of, like, animosity towards the players that stuck around when he left? Like, do you feel like the Raptors, like, any small part of them resent Kawhi Leonard?
No, I think zero's less than zero, right? Is there a number less than zero? Because that's the reality. We understand the business. We understand, as DeMar DeRozan, right? We understand this business and Kyle Lowry. So Kawhi Leonard came and did what he had to do, and then he left. Like, that's that do your job is a big thing in this, you know, league. And he did his job, and now he has the right, you know, free enterprise. He has the right to go do what he chooses. And I think it was the same thing with LeBron James. LeBron James, there's never been a player in the history of sports that I can recall, like, showing back up in his hometown saying, like, I'm going to come and end a 50-year drought of a championship, winning the championship. Stayed for another year, stayed for another 2 years after winning a championship. And what else do you want from a person? And I think that narrative from the media, that narrative from a lot of people needs to change. Not necessarily saying that you guys are projecting that, but just like, hey, what else do we want from this person? Like, this person doesn't owe us anything. We should be thankful that they had enough respect to give their all for when they did. This whole burning of jerseys and all that other bit, like, that stuff, you know, it was cute and social media made it, you know, like, interesting and appealing to talk about and look at. But a guy like Kawhi that could have, like you said, made Toronto a conduit to get him to L.A., he showed up and he played his heart out. He was banged up for a large portion of that, and he did everything in his power and had one of the great postseasons of all time. What is there to not like about the person after that? When he decides that he wants to go play in his hometown. If you don't like that about somebody, that's more of a reflection on you than it is about what that individual did for this community.
Well said, Richard. Thanks for doing this, and enjoy the game tonight and enjoy Christmas Day. Thanks.
All right. Thank you guys for having me.
Thanks, Richard.
Richard Jefferson. Hey, I'm greedy. I understand it, but I'm greedy. When we come back, odds and ends. It's Good Show. Ben Ennis, J.D. Bunkus, Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Now, back to Good Show with Ennis and Bunkus on Sportsnet 590, The Fan.
Odds and ends. Told you Kawhi Leonard doing his media availability right now-ish. Might be complete, actually, now. Headed towards his return to the Raptors tonight. A couple of highlights I have for you. Has he taken advantage of Kawhi and Dine? You got to figure that was a limited time only. Maybe not limited if he had re-signed. You eat and drink forever here.
No, I think he still gets Kawhi and Dine.
Anyways, he says,
that's the whole thing. If you win in this town, you'll never pay a drink again for the rest of your life.
Sure.
That's not contingent on where you're playing.
Maybe after the game.
No, if anything, before. Fill them up. Make them tired. you want seconds? No problem.
Yeah, apparently he did not take advantage last night, but he says we'll see after the game. Okay.
That used to be a thing, huh, when athletes didn't get paid as much as a real insensitive. Yeah. Hey, you don't have to pay for another beer or meal for the rest of your life. Mm-hmm. Now athletes are like, yeah, you know I'm a millionaire, right?
It's like, now you don't have to pay for, like, multiple cars, probably. Yeah. Like, even still, they're like, all right, big deal.
My whole life is getting things for free. I don't pay for my clothes.
A couple hundred dollars for a meal.
Anything.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah, a meal. Oh, $200.
All right.
Didn't know money came so low anymore.
All right, this is Kawhi on the billboard that says, thank you, Toronto, New Balance. The fans were amazing last year. They rolled with us through the ups and downs. We were down every series pretty much, and they stuck through it with us. They brought great energy to every game, and it helped us. So that's my thank you to them. All right. On how much he considered re-signing with the Raptors. I gave it a big consideration. I took my time. I didn't hurry up and make a quick decision. I talked to the front office in detail. It was a hard choice to make. And this one, what he's expecting from the fans tonight. I mean, there will be some cheers, but definitely I think more boos because they want to win the game. They're not going to be cheering for a player that's on the opposing team. Yes, I would hope not. So yes, cheer him pregame, cheer him first touch, boo him into oblivion after that.
I wouldn't be able to bring myself around to booing Kawhi.
I would.
I thought about this. Here, I think what my response would be is just cheering the misses more than anything.
Okay, same thing. Yeah. We'll see you tonight. We'll talk about it tomorrow.
Or maybe a chant of you miss us. All right. Would be good when he's at the line.
All right, bye.